ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Yup, that's me, Sasha Kaplan. And we've hit what I see as kind of like I think I've hit what is like X-Men movie exhaustion. Just because it's either these movies are really that bad or I just like cannot be bothered to care anymore. Either way, we are looking at what is only slightly better than X-Men Origins, in my opinion. I'm telling you this right now. My Wolverine movie rankings are X-Men Origins Wolverine, then this movie, then the Wolverine. Because I think the Wolverine is definitely the most interesting and original and less annoying of the three. Okay, so.
And I'm just here.
You can provide contextual aid and keep me on point if I start ranting too long. Okay. So, it seems to me that these films are sort of existing in their own bubble that is not connected to the rest of the X films. Because, I mean, I know the history of the X-Men. It's basically, oh, you prevent one dystopian future, you set off the, you know, series of events into another dystopian future. But after the hopeful ending we got in Days of Future Past, and then that Apocalypse sort of trounced on, well, you end up in this almost, like, place of, like, why is this movie necessary?
Well,
and I guess it's necessary because they wanted to make another Wolverine movie, but also because Hugh Jackman just wanted to be done with Wolverine because it was time, yada, 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 but...
Well, the only thing that really positively came out of the resetting from Days of Future Past was Deadpool, because it undid everything in Wolverine, X-Men Origins Wolverine.
I will give you Deadpool 2, even though I barely remember it.
And it let Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool become the Deadpool that it needed to be, as I changed my chair because I realized I'm not streaming and I don't have to actually be directly into my camera. Because I have my setup like I'm a Twitch streamer right now. But like for this movie specifically with Logan, this is the last movie that Hugh Jackman does as Wolverine.
Thank God.
But they wanted to really go off of the old man Logan storyline as much as they could.
Yeah, no, they didn't. They literally borrowed nothing other than the road trip from old man Logan.
Which is funny because like Hugh Jackman loves the story of Old Man Logan because he actually read it and he wanted it. But yet again, how much say did he actually have in a lot of this stuff?
Clearly not a lot, because this is the problem with the X-Men films. And we'll talk about this more, I think, when we sort of finish the saga. It's that these films are almost like, it's like they don't understand the X-Men. It's like they don't give a shit about the X-Men half the time. It's all about shoving as many storylines as you can and blending them together to try to create some sort of coherent film. And oftentimes they fail at it. And anybody who's been listening to me and bashing Bryan Singer and Kinberg, this is the situation I'm left with this film as well. And I will freely admit, I really did not remember a lot about this movie. So I'm sort of rewatching it for the first time ever. And I gotta say, there was so much potential. Because again, what this movie does is it's very loosely adapting the Old Man Logan story. And I mean very loosely. The only thing these two movies have in common is desert scenes and a road trip. That is it. Two, the second storyline is the X-23 storyline, which was first introduced in X-Men Evolution in 2000, which was a cartoon, which is really good, and the story was so beautiful. And in a half an hour, they managed to really pack a lot into that episode. And then, of course, just like with Harley Quinn, Laura was brought into the comics world. And then it's combining these two storylines, but they're very loose, and then they're adding this other BS into it that is so unnecessary. So let's just get into it, and I'll try to keep this as brief because I think our last episode was just like little under 2 hours.
Yeah, that was about an hour 45. Says the man who does the editing, and
so he would know. Anyway, so We open to a drunk Wolverine stumbling out of a limo. He sort of like wakes up because he's drunk, and then he sort of stumbles out of this limo. And there's these dudes who are trying to steal the tires on the limo. And he's like, you really don't want to do that. Like, trust me, brah, you do not want to do this.
What's the reason? What's the reason why? He doesn't want them to try.
Because he'll kill them.
No, that wasn't the reason. The reason he didn't want them to do it is because A, it was a lease, and B, it was chrome, and it was chrome-plated plugs, so whatever.
Right, I forgot. I'm sorry. This is a really fancy limousine. This is like bulletproof limousine. Yeah, anyway, but it's a lease, which then makes the thing that Logan does later seem a little bit pointless. But anyway,
Well, keep in mind, this is the first actual official R-rated film within the X-Men world.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, not including Deadpool, but yeah.
Yeah. So this is one where he literally just doesn't give an F after a certain point.
I mean, this entire movie is pretty much Logan not giving a shit. So anyway. So they shoot Logan. He's a little slow to get up, but he finally gets up. He fights the guys. He's very slow moving, but fights them off, sort of. He's extra stabby. Anyway, he gets into the limo and drives away to a motel, to like a motel or a gas station or something, and he's not healing like he used to. It's 2029, and they're still talking about mutants. We hear this on the radio. The radio is our context provider. Logan has a limo business, and he's driving like idiots and like sorority girls on or prom girls, and but also funerals. So at this funeral of somebody, there's a woman that identifies him as Wolverine and yells at him in Spanish and says she needs his help. We also see as she drives away that the lady has a little girl in the car. So Logan goes to the hospital and pays off a nurse or some dude with, and then some guy with a robot hand and glasses is watching. So this dude gets into the limo. He has an annoying accent and he's very long-winded. And we find out that this movie is that they're in Texas. And he asks if Gabriella, the Mexican lady that he was talking about, and they actually do identify as this Mexican lady, asks if Gabriella has been in contact and that she took something that he's responsible for. Logan is not amused and he's like, I don't know what she's talking about. I don't know her. Leave me alone. And then he's hiding. Oh, this person also mentions that he's hiding Q-Ball south of the border. We also see that Logan is interested in buying a boat. So anyway, the dude leaves his business card and says that he's a fan. He works for Alkali Transigen. Ha! What happened to Essex Corp? Remember that very interesting and like plot point after credit scene at the end of Apocalypse, Essex Corp, where they like steal Logan's DNA? What happened to that?
I think that was more for Kinberg's X-Men, not Mangold's.
Yeah, except that's
and if you keep in mind, like when we get the Dark Phoenix in two episodes, that goes one direction that Kinberg is still going, and Mangold's is going a completely different direction with Wolverine.
Well, apparently, I am just destined, as we've mentioned several times, Sasha's not allowed to be happy with X-Men films anymore. I remember watching the end of Apocalypse and just being so excited for Essex Corp because Nathaniel Essex, aka Mr. Sinister, and I said this all the way back in our first class review, is that Nathaniel Essex, aka Mr. Sinister, is one of the most batshit evil, like, he just oozes evil. Not to be confused with Ivan Ooze, we made that joke last week. He just like oozes evil and he's so evil and he's intimidating and he's kind of scary at times. I don't know why they didn't use him. I think they actually could have really used him in this film because one of the biggest problems in this film is the bad guys are boring. But anyway, so Logan arrives at a junkyard that he apparently has keys to. There's a dude in, wait, I'm sorry. There's a guy here who's, like, in a hat and covered up. This is Caliban? Like, that douchey-looking, like, assy, asshole-ish passport-making guy in Apocalypse, wow, he got a personality and an actor transplant. Okay, we're just going to use Caliban twice and just not do anything with this. All right. So we find out that the meds that Logan got from the guy at the hospital are actually not for Logan. They're actually for Charles. The person in question is hearing voices, asking random questions, and Charles is, I guess, crazy and doesn't want to take his meds. His uncontrollable powers are obviously very dangerous because he's a very powerful mind. So there's this whole thing about, like, Logan having to give Charles's medication, and if I'm being honest, and with all due respect to Sir Patrick Stewart, but Charles Xavier is absolutely unnecessary in this movie. Yes, he provides a bit of context and as a way to, like, be Logan's, like, Jiminy Cricket. But other than that, you could substitute a lot of different characters for this. And I'm sorry, this whole thing is just, it's cruel, in my opinion. It's cruel to X-Men fans. It's cruel to people that actually really like the journey that Charles has had over the course of the films, whether the original series or this new iteration of X-Men.
I think in a way, this was, like, just how, like, it was to end it for Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. I think this was the way they wanted to end it for Patrick Stewart as...
It's not necessary, though. Nobody asked for this. Nobody found it necessary. Days of Future Past gave the perfect send-off to Sir Patrick Stewart's Charles Xavier. If the franchise had ended at Days of Future Past, it would have been an annoyingly but decent ending to the franchise. And it would have been fine. Charles Xavier does not need this send-off. Like, it really doesn't, especially because you also set this movie in what is now 9 years in the future as of the recording of this episode. So, it's just cruel. Anyway, so Charles becomes a bit more lucid after Logan injects him with some serum and takes his pills. Apparently, he says he hates the albino. That's Caliban, because we also have to be mean to Caliban. Like, if I remember correctly, in the comics, Caliban is actually, like, a really sweet character. He looks kind of weird, but his powers is to detect other mutants. And, like, this is mean. Like, the X-Films have a problem with not giving a shit about the actual characters they portray in these films. And Caliban, I think, is actually a pretty great example, because, like, in the first one, or in Apocalypse, Caliban is just like, you don't have to do much with him, he's just a character that exists. But here you actually have an opportunity to do something with him, and he's sort, like, they could have done a little bit more with him just to kind of develop who he is just a smidge. He doesn't end up being a good person, but when we first meet him, he doesn't come off that way. Okay. So Charles tells him that there's something about the Statue of Liberty waiting for him, which is, I guess, an Easter egg towards the 2000 X film. And apparently we find out there's been no mutants born for 25 years. Okay, why is this necessary?
Plot point.
It's really not, though. You can cut it out of this entire film and it changes nothing. If you make a plot point, it needs to be an important plot point. If I make this movie and I can cut this entire thread out of this film and it changes nothing, then it's useless. Which it really is in this film. But anyway, there's been no more mutants born for 25 years. Oh my gosh, what an important point that should really be explored that we will get literally nothing out of. So Charles calls Logan a disappointment. Oh, and I will say that there's this really fun father-son dynamic between Charles and Logan, which is funny because Logan is old enough to be Charles's father and Charles looks like he's old enough to be Logan's father. So it's whose father is who. But Charles is also made the father figure because Logan does look up to Charles. So they talk about taking Logan in, giving him a family, something like that, that Charles gave him a family. And, like, Charles is kind of pissed at Logan. He asks what Logan did and why they're here. Says that Logan is waiting for Charles. He thinks that Logan is essentially waiting for Charles to die. But what Logan is actually doing is he is trying to make enough money so that he can take Charles and they can live on the ocean, which is why he's looking for a boat. so that the world and Charles can both be safe. So Logan has some claw performance issues. There's when he like fights the bat, they're like only half come out. Also, Caliban at this point has not been mentioned by name. He gets mentioned later, but not yet. So they talk about how he needs a higher dose of his medication, and how like the situation that they have isn't really working. Caliban makes a crack about how like the money is for Charles and Logan to get out, and Caliban is pretty much going to be left by the wayside, which is Logan just like doesn't say whether or not that's true, and that's just kind of mean. This movie is really mean to Caliban when it's not, doesn't need to be. There's a crack of, oh, they mentioned the adamantium bullet that I guess Logan's just waiting to pop one in. Caliban can't help Logan, whose eyesight is also going. Tells Logan he's sick. Logan arrives to the to a motel, or I guess he's dropping somebody off, and sees a little girl from Gabrielle's car. Should be noted that the hotel is called Liberty. So that's a fun little nod to Charles not being as crazy as everybody thinks he is. So he finally actually meets Gabriella. She says that she needs a ride to go to North Dakota or to Canada, to North Dakota to get to Canada, basically. And offers him $50,000, $20,000 for now, and then $30,000 when you get there. And she introduces the little girl whose name is Laura. Laura breaks something, the motel lady comes out and is kind of bitchy, and we see that, and like Gabriella tries to stop her and says, yes, I'll pay for it, but then she collapses because she's bleeding. We're not really sure why she's bleeding or what caused it, but details. She's a throwaway character, basically, so like, she's only here for exposition and nothing else. So we find out that Gabriella was a nurse because there's like this giant like briefcase full of supplies. She has articles about mutants, about like the birth rate situation, and there's very obviously fake X-Men comics. These are fake X-Men comics. These are X-Men comics that Joe Quesada made because they asked him to for the movie. They do not actually exist, which to me is just, this is just adding insult to injury. Like, not only are you basically butchering two different comics for this film to work, which it still doesn't, but you're also making fake comics when real comics have 60 years of continuity for you to pull from. That's just so cruel. I will give the X-Men films credit for being just as big of a continuity mess as the actual X-Men comics. That takes skill.
Or maybe right. That's the joke.
No, it honestly, that's a really cruel joke to play if it is. So she has, so there's friends waiting for them in Canada. She says that her boyfriend wants to kill her and take the kid. This is also a very unnecessary line. You can just say, my bosses are trying to kill me. The implication that Donald or Pierce or however you want to call him, who's never mentioned by name in this film either. What is it with X-Men films not mentioning characters by name? Is like her boyfriend? Like, why is this here? It's like somebody rewrote the script at the last minute and forgot to remove this line. Anyway, so she says Laura is her daughter, which is actually, we find out later, is not true in the biblical sense. So they have to get to North Dakota by Friday. James talks to Charles about leaving to be safe, and then they're going to go live on the ocean. So he comes back to the motel, but he sees that it's been broken into. And he tells Charles before he leaves that, like, I'm going to be gone for a few days, but when we come back, we'll pack up and go. We find that Gabriella is dead, but Logan finds her phone, and he takes it. So he comes back to Charles, and the albino finds something in the limo bag. Again, he's still not been mentioned by name. He sees a backpack with like a little ball in it. The bad guys arrive and it's creepy robo hand boy. He wants to see Charles. He calls Charles a weapon of mass destruction. And we see the girl. Logan basically lies and says he doesn't know, but it's like, oh, you've got this backpack and this ball. Pierce gets knocked out by a pipe, which is thrown by Laura.
And
okay, so You know, honestly, Laura throwing the pipe and just knocking the dude out was hilarious because you don't see it coming. You're just like, you just see a pipe coming out of nowhere. You're thinking, oh, the albino did it. Nope, it's the little girl who clearly stowed away inside the limousine. So we also find out that Charles apparently knows about Laura, and so, like, you don't see the pipe coming, or correction, you see the pipe coming, and you're like, where is this pipe coming from? So then Charles comes out and says that this is the they've been looking for her, they've been waiting for her, and so she grabs her stuff and goes with Charles, and Charles is like, oh, you're home now, you're gonna be safe here. I'm like, uh-huh, yeah, that'll happen. And we find out that Gabriella was not, in fact, her mother. And we also see Sir Patrick Stewart's Charles trying to interact with this girl in his broken Spanish, in Charles's broken Spanish. It was pretty funny. I think Sir Patrick Stewart needs to work on his Spanish accent, but he's such a great actor that I'm willing to forgive it.
As somebody who's playing an old dying man, you know, you can give him a pass for not having the best accent or dialect. When trying to speak another language, when they're in that state.
I guess if that was done on purpose, that's one thing. So I guess that is something. Okay, so Caliban takes Pierce away. Logan's like, take him away and then just call me. But just as Caliban's about to dump the body, Pierce wakes up and is like, okay, well, things have turned, haven't they? Let's see. So Logan takes Charles. So then more bad guys arrive and Logan takes Charles, but he insists that they need to take Laura too. There's this implication that Pierce comes back and that Caliban is dead. This is not the case, but we also see that Logan is very not a good match against these bad guys. So then like Laura's like eating cereal and as the bad guys enter the area, I'm like, oh, they're gonna die. They're gonna die. And it will be hilarious. And it's true. She just like walks through these guys and then she comes out and throws the severed head of the dude and then dumps the handcuffs. And then the guys start shooting and Pierce is like, don't shoot, she heals. I'm like, yeah, no kidding. And so they need to bring her back alive or dead. I'm like, good luck killing her or capturing her. We also see that she has two claws that form a kind of like, you know, rocker move as opposed to like the three that Logan has. So she starts walking through these guys. Shooting won't do anything. But they still have to go after her so they're like, oh, we need to go after her, but you can't shoot her. You clearly can't capture her. So like, what is the tactic of pursuit and capture here?
I like the one thing where like they're all shooting at her and like Pierce goes like, stop shooting at her, she heals, you idiots, you know.
Yeah,
he doesn't like, she's like a mini Wolverine.
We also see that she actually has one more claw. It is in her foot. There's a line about like, she's like you, Logan, but she's like, it's very clear that she's just like Logan in her fighting tactics, in the fact that she has the adamantium claws. And then they're in the limo and Laura just like casually pulls out a bullet and like just tosses it. So good thing Logan sprang for the bulletproof limo package. Just cause like this reinforced limo does actually save their lives and they're able to get out and escape. Then they're escaping in the limo, they're being pursued, and Logan actually does like this epic U-turn with the limo via train, to cut himself off from the bad guys, which was actually a very cool shot. That was really well done. That used to be a really nice limo. So bring me the tracker. So we find out that Caliban is in fact alive. Pierce says that he read about Caliban as a kid. I'm guessing it's in those stupid X comics. Pierce says that like he thinks that, you know, Pierce says he's the good guy and like you should help the good guys, and that Caliban is like used to be like okay with things like this, huge. Okay. Like, it would have been nice if any of these elements had been in the Wolverine or even in Apocalypse, but they weren't. So we're just kind of have to believe them. So Laura is not a natural mutant, we find out. She's an R&D mistake. So then we go back to Charles and Logan and Laura, and the cell phone that he took off Gabriella is about transgen research, and it shows that they basically engineered kids in a hospital facility, or it's a pharmaceutical study where the children were born in a lab. They never saw the sun, the rain, or snow, no names besides the ones that are like call signs or like, you know, file numbers that they were given. We find out that they were raised in the babies of missing Mexican girls, and that the fathers are specimens. So it's just, you know,
test tube babies.
And then we see that like the nurses or whoever it was that worked with the children on a regular basis threw like a birthday party. And I'm like, that's so cute. And then there's the video flashes to this guy named Dr. Rice yelling at this nurse who's like, these are things, not children. I'm like, okay. So there's a kid with sonic powers, and it's very clear that they're making these children into soldiers and killers. So then she says something about babies of mutants, and then the cell phone battery dies. Charles says he has a duty to the child, and Logan's like, what is she? And Charles says, your daughter. I'm like, well, yeah. So here, the big difference is in the comics and in the origin story established by X-Men Evolution, Laura is actually a clone. She's the only successful clone out of 23, which is why her Logan was Weapon X and she's X-23. So it says that, like, that Alkaline Lake had his like genetic material, so hearkening back to Alkali Lake being the facility where Logan was born, in case anybody forgot the 5,000 bajillion times they told us about this place and the 5,000 times we've seen it. It's been in like 4 movies now. X2.
Yeah, it was at X2.
X-Men Origins.
Yeah.
Days of Future Past and now here. I mean, not Days of Future Past, Apocalypse and now here.
Yeah, but they don't show Alkaline Lake. They just mention.
Yes, they do. In Apocalypse, they do. You see the aerial shot of it.
I'm talking about Logan.
Fine, it's mentioned. It appears in a form.
Yeah.
Anyway. Actually, 5 movies that if you include the first X-Men movie. But anyway. So I guess it took them like 40, 50 years to do this, assuming that the genetic material, like, just, I guess then the Easter egg at the end of Apocalypse was just meant to be the Easter egg for the next, like, X film, but it's just a useless thread that doesn't go anywhere now. Anyway, so Charles has to pee, so he takes him into the bathroom. Laura nearly kills a gas station attendant guy at the little convenience store. Logan gets a phone charger, and they leave. All right, we'll talk about it at the end. So the phone lives. And we find out that as the children grew older, controlling them became harder because, you know, these are still children with powers. So they decided to make something new, something without a soul. And we're not really shown what that is. We just see some x-rays.
Oh, we also see some body parts.
Yeah. So then they started shutting down the program and putting the kids to sleep, which is, I guess, obviously code word for murdering them. And so it's kind of unclear, but there's like a prison break, and I guess her Gabriella and the other nurses like escape with the children. It's not really clear how or why Laura and Gabriella were separated, or how she found out about Wolverine, or how she knows where he is, or any of that stuff. So then she talks about a place up north, Eden, which is going to be safe from mutants, and that they're so. Gabriella says that she does not know if the other children survived and says that, you know, this is a message specifically for Logan to take her to safety. So they begin the drive north and they should probably get a new ride because that limo is like super conspicuous. Anyway, so they make it to Oklahoma City, though we don't find that out until the end. They need clothes, a new car. Laura sees two mannequins holding hands with one, like with each other. And then Charles is like, she needs clothes. And it should be really funny that the actress who plays Laura was actually not allowed inside the casino. So that shot was actually made in green screen. And then they had to use a body double because there's like laws about children in casinos.
Yeah. Like, so at the time, Daphne Keene, who plays Laura,
he was 11.
She was 11 at the time of filming. They used her body double, who is similar in body, was 18 years old.
It's a tiny 18-year-old, but, you know, I can't really, I have no room to talk. So, Logan, they get her some new clothes, and then Charles and Laura end up watching some Western film on TV. Logan ends up coughing blood, and Charles talks about like watching this movie as a kid. That's like, the film is like he says that the film is almost 100 years old. So this is probably like a film from, I think in the IMDb it said from like 1940 or something like that. And coincidentally was, one of the first films that Sir Patrick Stewart actually saw as a kid. So anyway, so there's, he finds inside Laura's backpack, he finds a file, files from, Transigen, children's files, DNA sources, files confirm Logan's DNA is used in
So the movie that they watched was the movie called Shane, which was in 1953.
Close enough.
And this was all this was also, in fact, is actually a movie that Patrick Stewart first saw. It's one of the first memories he had at a theater as a child.
There you go. So this is the part where I just kind of want to bash my head against the wall. So we see this character who we find out is named Richter, and I will get to why that pisses me off as we get there later. But it should be noted that the character who is listed as his father is actually an Easter, it's a reference to a character named Avalanche. Oh God, I hate X-Men films sometimes. We'll talk about why that's so problematic in a little bit. So he doesn't really learn anything from the files other than confirming that Laura is, biologically speaking, his daughter. He also finds a bunch of X-Men comics, and there's an issue where he's cranky about the X-Men comics basically, and says like, this is fiction, about a quarter of it happened and it didn't even happen the way they said it did, and the other stuff didn't happen. So the bad guys arrive at the convenience store.
Which, let's be honest, which would be one way of saying that they're making fun of continuity issues. They're acknowledging the issue of continuity issues.
Not really, no. It's actually showing that reality and comic books are two very different things. Anyway, the bad guys arrive at the convenience store that we saw Logan and Laura in. So obviously Caliban is like tracing them. Logan drops off the limo at a junkyard, and Charles apparently he's cleaning out the car and sees that Charles didn't take his pill. He buys the truck and goes to the bar where they put on new tires. And then he reads some comics, and then he sees this Eden being mentioned at the end. It says the Eden of the End. Charles is leading the mutants to Eden. That is what it shows. There's like a shot of the various mutants, and Charles is leading them off like the cliffside to Eden. So he returns to the hotel, to the casino in time to see the bad guys. And there's a sonic boom that explodes, which is obviously Charles. And I really like the way this was done. This is a really cool scene of Logan navigating through everything. And this was such, it would have been so easy to use just shaky cam, but they actually shot it with shaky cam and then like slowed it down, which creates a really amazing shot. So I really like that. So anyway.
Now I have, this is actually, I get to do two shout outs. During this, I'm going to do one now because it's actually at the scene where the shout out belongs.
Go
and
for
then
it.
There's one later on. So the team that you see at the casino hotel is a team called Reavers.
Oh, they mentioned them by name later, but yes.
Yeah, well, the Reavers in the credits, they're just known as Reavers. There's a few of them that actually do have names. Like you have Mohawk, Macon, Bonebreaker, Pretty Boy, but then you just have Reavers. one of the Reavers is actually a friend of mine on Facebook named Luke Hawks, who also owns Wildcat Pro Sports, which is a professional wrestling promotion. Luke Hawks has actually been doing films lately, and I actually met him around shortly after he filmed that scene, because he's the one where Wolverine takes the claws and shoves it right here under his chin, right straight through his head.
Fun.
So that's the first shout out that I get in this episode. I'll do the second one later. But Luke cool. Hawks, here's your shout out.
So bad guys are the arrival of the bad guys triggers Charles, and so Logan is able to stop them because they're all sort of frozen in place except for the mutants, who are in pain. Logan gets some help from Laura, and they end up sort of killing everybody. And Logan gets the meds and injects Charles. Laura just kind of gives it to him, and then Laura kills the last bad guy. So the cops are coming, so Logan sees Cameron on the bad guy, and they make their escape. Logan drives away before the firefighters arrive, and I guess they call it a temporary paralysis. So then they say on the radio that this is something akin to the Westchester incident that killed 7 mutants and several X-Men. So Charles basically had an episode and killed half the team and the teachers, which is just so, I'm telling you, this is unnecessary. Like, you didn't have to explain how Charles got the, like, you really didn't. But then again, like, Charles really is not doing a role that couldn't have been filled by other characters other than this thing, this whole Sonic thing. But again, it feels cruel. It feels like it's sort of invalidating everything that was done to create a better future and everything. Just anyway. So Logan calls Charles Pops, which was kind of funny. There's young mutants being taken to other mutants, but Eden comes. So she says that, like, he tells her, like, Eden doesn't exist, and Charles is like, yes, it does. So Transigent has set up some roadblocks, I guess, or they're waiting for her helicopter to arrive, and Dr. Rice arrives to talk to Pierce, and then goes inside the truck to Caliban. So Charles tells Logan that she has the potential to be better than him. Then this nasty-looking truck, like, almost hits them off the road, and they swerve and do all this stuff, but they don't crash. But there's another car that has a kid and his parents, and there's horses. And they also pull over. They're forced to pull over, and the horses escape. And so Charles uses his powers to get the horses to come back, and then Logan helps the family get their truck out of the little ditch, and then they invite Logan to dinner. And as soon as they did that, I'm like, nope, they're going to die. Because Logan is never allowed to find happiness. His only happiness is in death. Which, again, proves to me that nobody bothered to read the comics. Okay, because as much as I hate Wolverine, he's not always unbearable. There are amazing stories where he trains Kitty and he is kind to children. And where, you know, he actually has, like, a heart and isn't just a jerk and isn't just angry. And there was a lot of potential in so many of these movies to do something with that that just barely ever happened. So Charles convinces Logan to lend a hand. Then they go to their house for dinner. This is what I have here. This is my note. It's a soon-to-be dead family offers dinner for their help. Dr. Rice's name is Xander, and he apparently Pierce tells him that he thinks Caliban isn't being helpful as he could be. And it's really like, okay, you have this conversation. And how does he like force Caliban to cooperate more? But whatever. So Rice offers to help him and save his friends and the world. I'm like, no, you're not. You're not offering that. Caliban says the Reavers are savages, and Rice actually agrees. But Rice has some better tactics, he claims, and asks about Charles's illness. The Howlets are on a road trip. It's Papa Chuck, it's Grandpa Chuck, and, you know, Logan and his daughter, Laura. That is so cute, it hurts. There's a really fun improvised scene where Chuck, when they talk about how Charles ran a special needs school and that Logan was not a very good student and he got kicked out of it a lot. Like, it's actually a really sweet familial moment between Charles and Logan, which was, I think, partially improvised by the actors, which was really fun. So the fam convinces them to stay the night and Charles agrees before Logan can protest. They need to keep moving, but they also need sleep. They've had, this has been their only meal in 2 days.
They don't get nice things.
Yeah, so then there's like some issue with the water pipes and he has to go to this dude's private lot because there's this organization. This is like another unnecessarily heavy plot thread that like, there's all of these little things that could lead to other things that are not necessary. Like this whole conflict between this poor farmer and these douchey other farmers that are corporate farmers, basically.
Well, in a way, but the one of the things that you notice though is that, and it's a continuous trend until we get to a certain point, is that every time Logan is trying to do one thing, because he, you know, like you said, he's trying to keep him on the move because they're trying to stay like mm-hmm. three steps ahead. Charles is railroading that every time. It's like, yes, we'll stay for dinner. Yes, we'll stay the night. Yes, Logan will help you deal with the water pipe problem. You know, so like Charles is always in a way trying to slow Logan down.
Which proves two things to me. One, that this is just cruel because Charles is literally about to die and that he's ultimately useless in this film. And two, that you had the potential and the space to write a good, solid film, but you threw in a bunch of these unnecessary things here that actually distract from the point of the movie, so that the director who wanted to tell like a deep and meaningful story with a good message and like interesting themes and conversations gets completely muddled by all this uselessness. And I'm not saying you can't deviate from the main story arc, like, at all, but this is like very similarly to the plot of like the first Percy Jackson movie, where like they have a goal and there's some deviations from the goal, and then anyway. So the dad takes Logan and they go to fix the pipes or whatever and get the water. Logan agrees, they leave. Charles talks about safety, love, family, home, and that Logan has time. Logan says the world's not the same as it was. Does Eden exist? Charles says yes. And Charles wants Logan to raise Laura. The trucks are part of some corporation, and that they're the ones that ran everybody off the road. Laura bonds with Nate, who is the son, and he gives her his, like, phone or iPod, it's unclear, and she like listens to music on it. It's really sweet, and actually like this family's really nice, and the kid that plays Nate is actually currently a main character on Legacies, so good for him. We see Laura later listening to music and holding a photo of the other kids and her in the photo. So Logan and the dad fix the water pipe, but the dad says he knows Laura's a mutant because she's silent. Because, you know, a kid can only be, like, closed off and aloof if they're a mutant, but whatever. There's a car coming, and it's these core guys, corporation guys, and Logan, as the muscle, they help, they get away. The dad recognizes that Logan has had some training. Charles tells someone to let her sleep, that, like, it's been a perfect night. It's like the most perfect night he's had in a long time, and that Charles doesn't deserve it because he's done so many bad things. But it turns out that's not Logan. It's a clone. And he kills the professor, or almost kills the professor. Then Laura attacks him. Nate dies. Then the mom dies. As Laura's being taken away by this younger looking, robotic looking clone of Logan. I guess Rice or somebody refers to it as the X-23 children. It should be noted there are no X-23 children. There is just X-23 and the 22 previous experiments that died to make X-23. Okay. So the guys from the water pump confront the wrong Logan, which is the Logan that's like dragging Laura to the truck. And Rice is all like, oh, don't worry about it. He'll come to us. And they basically just get murdered. Charles is dying, and Logan places him in the bed of the truck. Pierce goes to stop Logan alone. Caliban grabs two grenades and drops them, killing himself as he blows up the truck as well. Unfortunately, Pierce and Rice are both fine. Logan fights the clone. The dad actually saves Logan, but then he tries to kill him, but then he also dies in, like, from his injuries, and he doesn't have one more extra bullet to put in Logan. Rice is alive, and Logan and Laura drive away. He cuts Laura free from the weird little handcuffs they have on her. The evil Logan clone is alive and gets injected with something that will help him heal. Laura has the kid's phone, and they bury Charles. Logan still hates Laura for some reason. Like, I get Logan is like this bitter old man, but there's very clearly a little girl in danger and nobody there to help her. And his solution is, oh, I'm going to take Charles and leave, but I'm going to leave this little girl here. Like, it's like, I get it, but I also don't. And it's never fully explained why he, like, I understand Charles is his priority. But even when he only seems to go along with this as long as Charles is the one telling him to do it. So the truck, there's a point where the truck won't start and Logan just starts bashing it. And then he passes out. He wakes up in a doctor's office and says, oh good, you're alive. I didn't want to have to tell the little girl outside that her daddy's dead. And then it's kind of implied that the doctor says that something like is killing him. And Logan's like, yeah, I know. And I'm like, is the adamantium slowly poisoning him? Is this the plot point we're going with?
And an alcoholism.
The alcoholism makes sort of sense if he's not healing, but come on. The adamantium poisoning is like, this is just so half-assed. I'm sorry.
We're back in Iron Man 2.
Oh, God. You know, at least in Iron Man 2, it made more sense because, you know, Tony Stark doesn't have a healing factor. Anyway, so the doctor's like super psyched to fanboy over, oh my god, I got to meet a mutant before you're all extinct. So then he tries to offer some help.
Damn, but Logan's I wish people were that excited to see me all the time. Damn.
Logan is once again referred to as this little girl's father. Laura keeps walking to a new truck. How she got this truck? Is the person dead that she got the truck from? Not important.
So I mean, the guy was playing with the dog. They kind of ran off.
Let's hope.
She just took it.
There's a point where he's like, oh, she says thanks. He says thanks to her. She says, you're welcome. He's like, oh, you can talk. And then she starts like yelling at him in Spanish and like basically telling him like, why are you always yelling at me? Why are you being a jerk to me? And things like that. And then she starts sprouting off these random names of children. And then we get to Richter. Okay. In the comics, there is a wonderful mutant named Julio Richter. His first name is Julio. He goes by the name Richter. That is his code name. He can make earthquakes, just like Avalanche, but Avalanche's powers are kind of similar to Quake's, where they're outwards at the earth, causing an earthquake. But Richter is like tough. He's one with the earth. He's an earthbender effect, essentially. So they took a really cool mutant that has a really fantastic story and so much fun characterness, and they pretty much waste him just for the sake of naming him. It should also be noted that the other kids don't have names, but he does. And like, you could have put in Bobby Drake in there. You can't put Bobby Drake. You could have put like any of the existing mutants that are Laura's age.
You have a few of them. So you have Richter, Rebecca, Bobby, Charlotte, Delilah, and Lizard Boy.
Yeah, so, but they're never actually like, hello. They don't, they're not referred to by name. They're mentioned only when Laura sprouts off their names. And look, I think this is the point where like, if you wanted a mutant to be Laura's age, pick a mutant that's Laura's age. pick of the, you know, young X-Men characters that have were some mostly depowered by the at this point in the comics, but you had so many to choose from and you chose Richter and wasted one of my favorite X-Men. Why do these movies hate me? Why are they determined to hurt the characters I love? Oh, okay.
Because it's meant to be a love-hate relationship with you.
I have more faith in the MCU than I do with these films, okay? So he Logan tries to tell her that it's all fake, that Eden doesn't exist, and they can't he can't take her there. Why can't he take her there? He has nothing else going on. The only person that he was taking care of is dead. Caliban is seemingly dead as far as he knows. He has nothing else to do, so why can't he take this little girl to where she needs to go?
Because he doesn't believe it.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I don't really care. And also, like, what other choice do you have? You have to keep this little girl safe, and she's asking you to take her here. That's all you have to do. Then you can, so basically, he's like, okay, I'll take you there just to show you I'm right and you're wrong. Just to spite her. So there's this, like, we go to this, like, gymnasium, which has a whole bunch of dead bodies. Rice wants the tissue from Caliban's body. Pierce is alive and he's like fixing his hand, but he also finds Laura's photo, which has coordinates on the back of it and the names of the kids. Great. So Logan starts falling asleep at the wheel. Laura picks up, she's sort of like, I guess Charles told her that Logan is dying and she's like, you need to rest. So she makes him pull over. And then later on, she basically just starts driving the car. It should be noted that she asked Logan to let her drive and he's like, no. So daylight, Logan wakes up and he gets out of the car and finds a kid he finds her on the top of a clearing. And there's like other kids and then he passes out. So the kids there's like a pulley system that's been engineered and they lift him up so that he can be with the others. It should be noted the other adults that were supposedly involved with this jailbreak are not here. So they all, I guess, gave their lives for these children, but that's never explained. It's also never really explained if there were other people that were involved with rescuing these children or how that, anyway. There's a lot this movie doesn't explain. So they actually have not reached Eden, as it turns out. This is just a way station until the kids can get to Canada. Richter is in charge for some reason, because he's the one with the mutant name, so he must be in charge. And there's a kid with ice powers, and they inject Logan with some kind of medicine, and they actually make check with Richter, like, is this too much? Like, no, that's a fine dose. The medicine is what they were given, and in small doses, it can help with healing and things like that. In large doses, it makes you cocoa for Cocoa Puffs. I think weirdly enough, this movie ends the same way that Origins does. Because at the end of Origins, what do? They rescue a bunch of children. What does Logan do at the end of this movie? He helps a bunch of children get out to where they need to go. So, like, this is not the movie you want to have similarities to. I'm just saying. So Laura's asleep and safe. Logan has nightmares. I guess he's kind of been asleep on and off for about 2 days. And Logan and Laura have this moment where they both talk about how they've hurt a lot of people. And something that should be noted, and I'm still very confused by, is why Laura is very violent, but the other kids largely aren't. Like, it looks like the kids are far more reluctant to use their powers than Laura is, and we're really never given an explanation. In the comics, the explanation is that they bred her as a clone, as a clone of Wolverine, and then they sent her up to murder people, and that's how she became, that's what happened. And that the professor, doctor, nurse, whoever, who was involved with this project realized the horrors of what she's done, and was like, no, I need to get her to safety and get her out of this and take her to Logan, who can maybe help her regain some humanity. And this movie doesn't explain anything about that, of like, why is it that she's more violent than the others? And I guess you can chuck it up to Logan's DNA, but that's a stretch. She asks him about the adamantium bullet. Then we see a drone looming in the distance. There's a cute scene where the kids are like trimming Logan's beard that served a purpose. Richter tells Logan that today's the last day and that they're leaving tomorrow to go to Canada. The line of dialogue here is just a little bit strange of like, he's like, so why are you guys, so he was like, you need to get out of here. And he's like, yeah, this is the plan. We know. I'm like, all right, cool. Good for you. Richter gives Logan the rest of the money, but Logan doesn't take it. And then he's like, oh, I'm not leaving. Oh, and then he tells her that he's leaving, obviously, because he's done the job and Laura's upset. And he's like, well, I didn't take the money. I'm like, that's your selling point. And then Laura just like rolls her eyes and says, oh yeah, you're a real superhero or something along those lines. Laura has a right to be upset that Logan's leaving because he's her father. And I think, although it's never explained, I think she's keenly aware of this fact because hello, how many other people have funky metal claws poking out of their hands and feet in her case? So Logan says that bad shit always happens to people he cares about. So Laura says that, oh, guess that out. Guess I'll be fine then. Richter leaves him with a dose of the serum and a note that says not all at once. Logan sees the drones and the cars coming. He takes the full dose. He takes the dose with him and goes after the kids and the bad guys. Logan hears the kids screaming, then ejects the whole thing of the serum inside of him. And the kids begin to, I guess, run. The kids just like continue to fight or to run. And one sort of tries to fight, but then they all get captured fairly quickly, which again makes me wonder, why is it so difficult for them to capture Laura, but they capture the rest of these kids with virtual ease? But that's the problem when you have one main kid character and you don't bother to do anything with anybody else. And yet still imply that these kids are all supposed to be on equal footing. There's like an ice kid. There's a girl that impales folks with like pine needles.
That person is actually Daphne Keene's stunt double. And she's Pinecone Girl.
Whatever. Logan is coming. He's walking through the bad guys because he's running on high on serum. So Pierce arrives with Rice and they go after the kids that are like sort of the captured ones are like in a corner. Richter gets shot, but it's just a flash wound. He gets captured by Pierce directly. Laura's surrounded when Logan arrives. They sort of do this cool Wolverine tag team thing for a bit and they walk through the bad guys, but the medicine wears off and Logan takes a gun. So they go to they see the captured kids and says that they have to rescue them. So Logan sends Laura to the kids and says, you'll know when. Then Richter gets knocked out again and Rice tries to reason with Logan. He's the son of a scientist who did this to Logan. Okay, and? Like, you could have left this completely, you could have, like, there's a lot of different ways you could have done this, but to add this plot twist at the end is just sort of very cheap. But it's also then revealed that Rice is the one responsible for wiping out the mutants. How, you ask? By GMOs in your food. This is really stupid. I'm sorry. It really is. This whole thing, the eradication of the mutant population, is done through gene therapy in your cereal. That just proves to me how cheap and unthought out this entire plot point was. And it also, like, there's obviously no way to, like, undo what has been done. So there will be no more mutants because these kids are not mutants. They are genetic. Well, I guess they're sort of mutants, technically, because they're children of mutants, but they are not mutants in the traditional sense because not all mutants have the same powers as their parents. Not that there's a lot of kids of mutants, but like, look at, I guess, the most obvious example is Nightcrawler and Mystique. Even in the comics, Mystique's powers are shape-shifting. The only thing her and Kurt have in common is they're both blue, and it's not even the same shade of blue. So, I guess Rachel is the closest example of this, but her powers are her powers are similar enough to be like the daughter of, what was it? She's the daughter of, I think, a Jean Grey clone in Cyclops. So, like, her powers are similar enough that she has the telepathy, but she also has other stuff that Jean doesn't. Same thing with characters like Cable, too, I guess. Anyway. Logan shoots Rice and Pierce, and then Laura kills some guys to get the kids free. The electric kid does something. Then we find out that Pierce or Donald is still alive, but the kids actually kill him, which was kind of cool. One traps him inside grass, which wasn't Richter. One is, like, electrocuting him, and they're also, like, freezing his body. I'm like, okay. Like, he could have just left him for dead. Kind of wasn't necessary, but I guess there was still money in the CGI budget for this. So Richter gets away. Logan is fighting his clone again. Laura puts up a decent fight against the evil, helps to fight against the clone, but obviously she's no match. Logan's impaled by a spear. The kids finally do something. Oh, this is where the kids actually kill Donald. Richter finally does something and uses the earth to, like, crush the Logan clone with the car. Logan tells the kids to run as Logan gets stabbed by the bad guy, by the clone, because the clone obviously didn't die from this. Then Laura loads a gun with the adamantium bullet and kills the clone. Although he probably reconstituted, but it's an adamantium bullet, so there's a 50-50 chance, because it's really whatever the plot convenience deems is the worth of an adamantium bullet. Logan dies and tells her to take the friends and run and that they don't have to fight anymore. And then, of course, this is the penultimate moment that is the only hearkening to the Wolverine, in my opinion. And this is Logan dying, holding his heart in his hand. And the heart is actually his little girl that he met 2 seconds ago. And then she calls him dad and cries. And it's like, I would have been cooler if there was, like, a little bit more of a buildup of Logan slowly coming to care about this girl. But it's sort of, like, only happens after Charles dies. And it's kind of frustrating and I think unfair.
Well, I think the reason that it really builds after Charles dies is because Logan's being resistant against it while Charles is alive, because Charles is forcing this upon him. And most like anybody else, when you think about it, like, how would you feel if you had something just forced upon you instead of having it kind of naturally brought upon you?
Right, but it sort of was naturally brought upon him when Gabriella reached out and told him, and he's like, oh, I don't care,
but
I'm leaving.
But think of the first time that Gabriella and Logan met. Logan's on
a job. No, she comes off very strong.
Yeah, exactly. But he's on a job as a limo driver for a widow for a funeral. And she just approaches him while he's on the job. And it's like, that leaves that sour taste in your mouth right off the bat. So when he gets notified that he has to go to this location, which is the Liberty Motel, you know, he sees her again. He really has that sour taste in his mouth still at the time. So he feels like he's being forced into a situation rather than naturally brought into the situation.
I guess, but it's still very frustrating. But I think this actually gets to the problem, is Charles, by kind of going off your point, is like, you don't really need Charles in this. Like, you can have anybody, any character saying that, like, oh my God, she's your daughter, why don't you want to, like, help her? That could be anybody. It'd be hilarious if it ends up being, like, Scott right before he's killed or something. And then Logan decides, okay, now I need to do this. And then that's where the film really takes off. But it sort of feels like the film, for the majority of, like, the first half up until Charles dying, doesn't have any clue what it actually wants to do with it. And then when Charles dies, they're like, oh, cool, now we can do this part.
Well, I think at that point, because now it's not a matter of force, it's just those two
together. I understand that in movie canon, but what I'm saying is that you could take this out and rework the plot a little bit and make this the overreaching theme for the entire movie, is how over the course of this film, from the beginning when he meets her all the way through to actually, like, anyway, it would have had a little bit more emotional payoff at the end then. So anyway, the kids bury Logan, and then Laura speaks about him, and then everybody leaves, and Laura decides to take the cross and she reforms it into the X, and then that's the end of the movie. And then the kids obviously make it to Canada. This movie is long, dull, and boring.
Should be noted that there is a bonus scene. I don't know if it's on the Logan Blu-ray or if it's on the Deadpool 2 Blu-ray, but they actually did a bonus scene where they brought in Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, where he finds Logan's grave. And they made the joke where he was going to revive Logan.
I think that's in Deadpool 2.
I think it's in the Deadpool 2 Blu-ray set, but it's a deleted scene. It's a joke, obviously, because this, you know, because both Patrick Stewart said that he is retired as Charles Xavier, especially after watching the film. He felt that this was the best send-off for him, so he doesn't have to come back for the role.
See, I get that. I like the idea of, like, leaving a door if somebody, like, was potential for a good new story, but I actually really like the peaceful send-off in Days of Future Past. It really takes out the necessity of including this. I think Charles got a crappy send-off.
But the thing is, well, Patrick Stewart disagrees with you. He likes it.
Patrick Stewart is allowed to be wrong.
But the other thing is, Patrick Stewart has also said that he'd be willing to revive the character for the X-Men show Legion. But also at the same time, he's also
Legion's been canceled. So that doesn't really work anymore.
But also, he has openly noted that because it is science fiction, anything can happen at the same time. Hugh Jackman, by killing off his character, you know, this is the ending he wanted, but he also admits that he regrets it because he knew Deadpool was going to be an enormous hit. They've been doing the running gags about his character constantly in the films, and he regrets not being able to go into the MCU at least one time. He just wanted to do one time in the MCU.
Yeah, no thank you. No thank you. I'm done.
From the sound of it, he is content being retired from the character of Wolverine. But at the same time, he can still do cameos in both the MCU and in Deadpool.
Shut up.
Let me finish.
No!
But never be Wolverine. He could just show up as Hugh Jackman. Especially in Deadpool, because that would be the biggest part of the joke.
Fine, you can have him in Deadpool, but not in the MCU. Compromise? Great. Okay. Yeah. I've said this before. Wolverine is the most oversaturated character in this franchise. Like, even more so than Charles and Eric.
I've actually been, when I'm not falling asleep while watching it, I've been watching the X-Men animated series on Disney Plus. And the reason I've been saying I'm falling asleep is just because my body's tired. It's not because I'm bored by the show. But, you know, I'm looking at it and you keep going on about how, like, you're tired of Wolverine and stuff like that. Wolverine is pretty heavy centric on the animated series.
Yes, but first of all, I haven't rewatched the series in its entirety in very many years. First of all,
I'm a binge watcher, so I just watch it all in one shot.
Second of all, the way Wolverine is never. There are episodes that focus more heavily on Wolverine, and then there are episodes that focus less heavily on Wolverine. And I think, from what I remember, there is actually a balance to it.
Well, yeah, there's always going to be a balance.
But Wolverine is not, within the scope of the animated series, Wolverine doesn't become the titular character of the series. In a lot of these films, especially with Days of Future Past, it ends up being all about Wolverine at the point of compromising other characters' existence. And the X-Men animated series never did that. They never compromised other X-Men for the sake of Wolverine. Except Morph, but nobody cares about Morph.
Well, no, and I agree with that point. But the thing is, though, is that he's still a focal point of the show, to the point where he actually gets second billing in the intro to Cyclops.
I'm fine with that, because, again, this was an ensemble show. Storm got, like... I would argue that, like, Jean Grey is actually more of a focal point in a lot of the time in the show, because you did the Phoenix Saga and the Dark Phoenix Saga. I could argue, like, you can make really good arguments that contradict the idea that Wolverine is, like, the central focus, right? You can't really do that in the same way in these films. And but here's the other difference. Within the animated series, we actually got to see a lot of different aspects of Logan. We got to see Canadian Logan. We got to see World War II Logan. We got to see Wolverine that cares, a Wolverine that's more of a jerk, and it balances those out really well. The relationship he has with Jubilee in the animated series is actually really interesting and is different from the relationship he has with Jean, which is very irritating. But Jean's relationship with everybody is pretty much irritating. But I never felt like the show was all about Wolverine the way that a lot of these films were. And I think I understand, obviously, that this is like Logan. It's going to be all about him. But as an X-Men fan, I'm tired. So let's talk a little bit about so things that were not necessary. The whole mutants are being eradicated thing. Richter as a character could have been replaced with literally anybody. And this is the other issue. I've said this before. If I can substitute a different character and get the same result, then you haven't done a good job with this character. Right? You can't just put a different character in a film like Captain America, right? It has to be Steve Rogers. You can't just make anybody Bucky. You can't just put Bucky in as any character and make it the same. Like, it just, there's a reason why these characters are the way they are. But if I can take the plot of your movie and remove Richter and say, put in Emma Frost, and it doesn't change anything by and large, even if you make her a little girl, right? Then you have not done a good job. And this movie wastes so much time on Charles, essentially. Like, Charles doesn't need to be in this movie. His role could have been filled by anybody. And if this whole thing is supposed to be about Laura and Logan's relationship and how she's going to be, like, how she's his heart and how Logan, this is the end of Logan and how he's going to be the savior of these children or whatever by the end of it, but you don't bother with any of the other kids. You just kind of throw them in there because, like, oh, yeah, we need the other kids. The director of the film,
James Mangold,
he talked about how he wanted the film to be R-rated because he had this vision of this being like a deeper film that he could like have longer scenes with better dialogue and that it wasn't just going to be like a cookie cutter X-Men like teen film.
Which is especially what he did with The Wolverine because he was constrained to the PG-13 rating.
But here's the thing. Despite the fact that The Wolverine was PG-13, it had a significantly more depth and was way more interesting than this film.
And I think that's because, like, it was more limited to who you had. Like, you had one main villain mutant, which was Viper. You had the old man.
Silver Samurai, yeah.
Yeah, as the villain there. And then, like, everyone else was, like, kind of more in that supporting role to kind of build up to that point at the end of the film. Whereas this one, you had a little bit more involved than probably should have. But
there's another thing here. The other really big difference is, first of all, really memorable villains like the Silver Samurai and Viper, and very forgettable villains like Rice and Pierce, because they're forgettable. They're generic. We've seen the evil scientist already in the X-Men films. We've seen the evil military dude, the experiments guy. Like, it's been done to death, right? But the other problem is the Wolverine adapted one storyline. One and a half, really, depending on, like, which version of, like, the very many trips to Japan that Logan takes. But it essentially adapts one part of the story, which is Mariko and the Silver Samurai, right? That was one specific story. This is trying to do Old Man Logan. It's trying to do the one of the many extinction events that the X-Men and the mutants have, right? And it's also trying to do the X-23 storyline. Pick one and stick with it.
So throwing this out there, two little tidbits. So you remember how you mentioned the comics that were shown in the film?
Mm-hmm.
One of them was actually real. One of the comics Laura had in her bag was X-Men number 132. This is the comic that had the first appearance of the X-Men villain, Donald Pierce. So they had one of them there as a real...
Actually, it wasn't as a comic. I know what you're talking about. I remember that scene. He actually flips the comic over and it shows the cover of X-Men 132.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, so it's a, I'll give them the Easter egg.
And then also, this movie takes place 6 years after Wolverine woke up in an alternate 2023 at the end of X-Men Days of Future Past. So in Days of Future Past, it's actually 2023 when he wakes up.
Wow, so everything goes to goes to absolute shit in the span of 4 years?
That 6 years, just adds, yeah.
6 years. This is just so cruel and unnecessary. It's unnecessary. Like, okay, look, think of, okay. Watch.
So, but here's the funnier part. This is the other little tidbit to this. However, it was later confirmed that the previous X-Men movies took place on Earth 10,005, while Logan takes place on Earth 17,315.
So they just Elseworld it, which is that's a bullshit cop out. I'm sorry. But
here's the thing. Like, you can Elseworld things and it's fine because, like, that's what, you know, eventually when we get when we get the DC movies, that's what Joker is. Joker is an Elseworld film. It's outside of the realm.
But Joker is very specifically shown to be outside of the scheme, right?
Yeah.
This movie is not. There is nothing in this film that tells the average viewer, oh, don't worry about these other films. They're still in canon. This is an Elseworld story. And that's the problem. Because until you told me that, I did not know that. And I'm pretty well versed in X films and all this jazz. But here's the thing. This would have been cooler if this was like a sequel to a more direct sequel to the Wolverine, right? Let's say it is the future, right? If we want to continue this thread from Days of Future Past, let's say that Yukio comes to Logan and says, Logan, you know, haven't seen you in a couple years. Like, what's going on? He's like, oh yeah, I remember you now. And this is, I found something and I need your help. There's this little girl. There's these reports of this girl with claws killing people. And that sets the movie off. So I feel like that would have been a little bit better and tied a little bit more into it without crapping all over previous continuity and then copping out and says, oh, this is an Elseworld story. This movie really should have been more about Laura and less about everything else because the little girl is so good in here. She's such a good actress and she does such a good job with a character that barely gets to do anything else other than fight. And, you know, in the comic, she was turned into a weapon. There's this really amazing scene in X-Men Evolution where eventually she just like breaks down and cries and cries and cries because all she's ever known is death and killing, and nobody's ever really held her and told her that they loved her, and the nurse kind of did but didn't, and the doctor, whoever she was, but like she breaks down because she has this realization of like, I am a killing machine, and what if, and that's all I know and that's all I can do and that's wrong. And we don't really get that here. Because I think Logan learns a lot from Laura, but I ultimately don't think Laura learned anything about from Logan. And that's, I mean, you could argue maybe she did, but I just don't see it. So there we go. This movie was long, dull, and boring.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So I have to admit one thing. In the very beginning of the film, when we first see Professor X, you know how he's like rambling on incoherently and starts rattling off this random stuff. I'm not gonna lie, I really like that because it's a good way to show that Professor X, you know, hey, you're in the future now. Professor X is old and is becoming a bit more senile, but it's also showing that something also isn't right with Professor X, and you know he was doing he was pretty much rattling off a Taco Bell advertising copy. So it was kind of funny.
Oh, that's kind of sad, but yeah, I get it.
But you can kind of see like how he's like kind of slowly from there. Oh, that's what they did. The Deadpool 2 teaser trailer was omitted from the DVD release from Logan. So when Logan was released on DVD, they took out the Deadpool 2 teaser trailer, which aired at the end of Logan in theaters. That's what it was. But it got
because that changes the tone of everything. And
then it got put into the Deadpool 2 as a deleted scene type thing.
Right.
So that's where that was. That was like one of the last notes on here. So let me get to my thing over here. So real quick, we were talking about this when we had to do a quick break in the middle of the episode. Hopefully I edited it perfectly. But James Mangold directed this and also The Wolverine. It should be noted that he did the story for he did the story for both films. Come on, work with me here.
You said that like the two movies have different script writers.
He did the story for Wolverine. However, the screenplay was written by Mark Bomback and Scott Frank. That's the Wolverine. Now, for Logan, James Mangold still writes the story, but the screenplay is written by Scott Frank, James Mangold, and Michael Green. So Mark Bomback did not return for the Wolverine. One may wonder if Mark had returned and they not had Michael, could Scott, James, and Mark done some different things to the script compared to what was, you know?
I mean, obviously, whatever they did would have been different than what we got, just by nature of having a different perspective. But this movie is just so, in parts random and parts all over the place, and it's just very. It's possible there's something redeeming about this movie that I'm not seeing, because we just reviewed Apocalypse and I'm still like a bitter, cranky X-Men fan. But that is what I have. So I'm guessing, because I remember the reviews and everybody saying how good this movie was, it is rated relatively well.
Yeah. So 2 hours, 17 minutes, and it got an 8.1 out of 10, making it the highest rated film on IMDb for an X-Men film.
That's such crap. I'm sorry. X-Men First Class, to me, despite some faults, is still the best X-Men films out of all of these. And rewatching this one and X2 are still my favorite films. So it's interesting that, like, despite the fact that I'm looking at these films more analytically than I previously did, my overall opinion of these films is still the same in terms of which ones I think are the best. The only thing that's really changed is I have a much deeper hatred for Days of Future Past than I did before.
Yeah. Last shout out that I have is actually for Stephen Dunleavy. So as you know, Pierce had like his main heavies. One of the main heavies, and he's actually the one that like tries, I think he does like the handcuffing of the girl, which is Macon. That is played by Stephen Dunleavy. Stephen Dunleavy is mostly a stunt person. He's done films like Mad Max Fury Road and others. And he was actually, he played the Egyptian in the TV show Spartacus on Starz. And that's actually how I met him, because I did a convention and I actually got to host one of his panels. And also interview
him. That's pretty cool.
And interview him for the experience. And super cool dude. So I just wanted to do that's the second shout out for Stephen Dunleavy, who played Macon in the film.
That's awesome.
So I know two people who are in that movie.
That is pretty cool. So Michael, where can the people find you on that social media thing?
Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitch at twitch.tv/themichaelx75. And website txhthockey.com/, and then for the show /nerdy-notions, which I realized we didn't do that plug last episode.
That's okay. So as for me, you can find me on Geeky Captain on Instagram, Geeky Kaplan on Twitter. I actually just posted my thoughts on the new WandaVision trailer, which we got on Christmas Day. Which is when we are recording this episode, because what else do two Jews have to do on Christmas? You can also find me on geekgirl101.tumblr.com, and of course geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com, where I review comic books and hurt my fingers. So thank you all for watching, and come back next time where Sasha gets to suffer again with Deadpool 2.
Hey, there's only two episodes left of this.